You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
Doug Irwin and Chris Lewis from the Greenville Triumph for joining us earlier in the show. The Triumph announcing yesterday that a new 10,000-seat soccer facility is on its way to the Bridgeway Station in Malden, South Carolina. Very excited about that. We've got coming up in the next segment my interview that I did yesterday with ESPN's Marty Smith. Phenomenal conversation with Marty. I'll play that for you coming up next. We got at 9 o'clock, Hayton S. Mario Heron from the BetQL Network. Look forward to speaking with him. 9:20 Fight Club with the great one, Lonzo. And then in that last segment, we'll talk a little World Series. The LA Dodgers are your 2024 World Series champions. They take Game 5 from the Yankees last night. A 5-run rally by the team in the dark blue as they are able to get back thanks to some mistakes to keep it classy in front of our next guest. She covers the South Carolina Gamecocks for the Greenville News, based in Columbia, South Carolina. The lovely Lulu Kessin joins us now on the show. Good morning, Lulu. Happy Halloween to you.
Good morning. Happy Halloween to you guys. Thanks for having me as usual.
Are you a costume person? Do you still get in on the fun and shenanigans, or are you one of these sad people who say that fun's not allowed?
No, I'm dressing up tonight. I'm doing something low-key, but I don't mind. Like a good, easy costume. So for sure, I love Halloween.
Are you ready to reveal to the nation what the Halloween costume this evening is going to be?
Yeah, I'll say, even though I told my parents it would be a surprise, but it's a couple's costume. I'm going to be Tammy Taylor, and my boyfriend's dressing up as Coach Taylor from Friday Night Lights.
Yes! Bravo! Clear eyes, full heart, can't lose, Lulu Kessin. I love it. Well done.
Thank you. Exactly.
Let's go. That's good. That's a good choice. That's a good choice. All right, let's talk some South Carolina football. Lulu Kessin, bye week in the back pocket now. We talked a little bit about what you wanted South Carolina to accomplish during the week off last week, and now they've gone through that. It's just about game day. What can you tell us the coaches, the players, et cetera, have been saying about what they did accomplish during the bye week?
I asked Shane Beamer kind of flat out. I was like, you were so frustrated after Ole Miss because you said you had such a great week of practice and then South Carolina comes out and plays the way that they did. So I was sort of like, how do you guarantee, even if you have a great week of practice this week, that you don't get the same result? And he seemed honest. He was like, yeah, we made some adjustments. He had addressed it even before I asked him. They kind of work the schedule of their bye week around. I think they had different off days, and he said just by nature of being healthier, they were able to do a lot more, which felt good. They, all three coaches we've talked to said that they feel a lot better with what they were able to accomplish this past week than the week prior, just with like Lenoris and Rocket being pretty banged up the first bye week. So am I 1,000% confident that South Carolina is going to like come out on Saturday and not look sluggish? Like, I don't know, but it did seem genuine in the coaches that they at least believe that there'll be a positive change based on how they prepared this past bye week versus the last one.
The thought that Zoe and I had at the conclusion of the Oklahoma game, and I think we talked a little bit about it last week, was that the offense kind of took the foot off the gas a little bit in the second half. I mean, that's a game that we all wanted to see the Gamecocks go put a 50-burger up on the road at Oklahoma. They didn't do that. You mentioned it. It sounded like Shane was a little frustrated about that. Do you think we see a more aggressive mentality specifically out of Dow Loggins in the offense, but out of this team as a whole this weekend? Because this is absolutely a step up in challenge level than Oklahoma was.
1,000%, and I don't think they win the game if not. I was a little surprised. I mean, granted, who knows what actually went on in the second half versus Oklahoma, but, like, yesterday Dowell expressed, because it was media's first time talking to Dowell Loggins since the Oklahoma game, and he seemed pretty annoyed with the way South Carolina played in that second half. And so I was sort of like, okay, he wasn't saying, oh, I was calling vanilla offense. I took my foot off the gas, whatever. So I was sort of kind of like, okay, where was that coming from? But that being said, I just don't think South Carolina can even keep this Texas A&M game close with any boring offense and with no aggressiveness and no assertion. Then they're going to have a difficult time for sure.
What specifically, and obviously our last question will and always is, Lulu Kesson, what do the Gamecocks need to do to pull off the win here? But if I asked you to kind of game plan this out, I mean, to me, defense has got to set the edge. You cannot let either of the two A&M quarterbacks get to the outside of the pocket. You cannot give them any room to be comfortable. I don't know if that involves putting a spy on these two cats when they're running around, or if you're just trusting two very good young edge rushers to consistently set the edge and keep them in the pocket. That is the key to the game as far as I'm concerned. If I ask you for one or two that you think South Carolina is going to lean on to try to contain the Aggie offense, what would they be?
Yeah, so that's kind of exactly what I've been looking at. It's, in a sense, it's a little bit of iron sharpens iron, just for lack of a better phrase, because it's kind of the South Carolina's at its best stopping the run game. I think they're like third this year as of right now in the SEC in just like fewest rushing yards allowed per game, but obviously Texas A&M has one of the best rushing attacks in SEC football. So it's obvious that Texas A&M is going to run the ball. This isn't a game like LSU where I felt like South Carolina competitively could match up, but kind of lacked in the skill department a little bit here and there. Whereas on the flip side, Texas A&M is clearly not really going to throw the ball. I think even in their win against LSU last week, they were like 6 of 20 or something passing. Like, neither quarterback wants to throw the ball. But on the flip side, both teams are pretty comparable in terms of stopping the run game, whereas Texas A&M is a lot worse at defending the passing game than South Carolina is. So I imagine South Carolina, in order to game plan, has to look at the fact that they're a lot weaker when you throw the ball, and South Carolina is clearly more comfortable doing so than Texas A&M is. So while I think Texas A&M's offense is stronger, South Carolina may have to lean into their versatility if they're going to pull this one out, because I don't think that you can sit here and say, like, oh, South Carolina has proven enough on the offensive end of things to, you know, outplay the best of the best, whereas clearly their defense has said that almost every game.
I don't disagree with that at all. So offensively, is this one about opening up the playbook a little bit? Because obviously there's been a lot of conversation about Lenoris Sellers. We have seen the flashes of genius, but we've also seen the mistakes of a young man under a little bit of pressure. I think you can point to the Alabama game perhaps as the best illustration of that. So now that he got to go out on the road to Oklahoma, played well, the team was able to put some points on the board, though the defense carried a lot of it offensively. You were able to find the end zone a couple of times. Do we think we start to see the playbook open up for Lenoris Sellers a little bit this weekend?
I think so. I mean, you know, Dowell said the whole thing about the Mazio touchdown. Like, that wasn't even in the playbook, you know. Like, I think Dowell is going to do what Dowell wants to do regardless. I think that, obviously, the opponent really matters. But, truthfully, I think Dowell trusts that Lenoris isn't going to continue to make the same mistake twice. While, yes, he has game after game, you know, turned the ball over, fumbled, whatever, like, in a way, I sort of am trusting that Lenoris has reached a point, because that Alabama game was kind of so obviously his fault, to say it harshly, that he's at a point where he's like, I can't do that again, didn't have any turnovers against Oklahoma, and is hopefully on this upward trend, which may result in a little bit more for him this weekend, because he's earned that trust in the last, you know, 2 weeks.
Lulu Kessin covers the South Carolina Gamecocks for the Greenville News. She joins us every Thursday at 8 o'clock to talk a little bit about this Gamecock program. As far as what we have seen in Southeastern Conference play, Texas A&M, obviously the last undefeated team in conference, I think this is, Lulu Kessin, a very good Texas A&M team. I don't put them up there with Georgia. I don't put them up there with Texas. I don't put them up there with Ohio State. I don't put them up there yet amongst the absolute cream of the crop when it comes to overall college football play. It's obviously a very good team. I think Mike Elko does something, though, that Jimbo Fisher never did. It is a team that plays good, intelligent, and disciplined football, which I don't think was ever the case under Jimbo Fisher. I absolutely think South Carolina's got the dogs to make this. I won't say win, to make this a football game, but I think more so than Ole Miss, more so than LSU, more so than even Bama, to win this game, South Carolina has to play clean football, mistake-free football, cannot turn the ball over. I think even minus one in the turnover department ends up costing you any shot at winning this game. What is your analysis on the increase, fingers crossed, in discipline of this team after that Alabama game, after that Ole Miss game, certainly in what I think is a game that you've got to play pretty damn close to perfect?
Yeah, so here's what I think is a little bit odd. That Shane Beamer had been very vocal, like, we address turnovers, we address discipline, we address mistakes. And then he said, like, oh, the key to the game against Oklahoma was just dominate the turnover battle, win the turnover battle, play clean. And then they did that. They had, three forced turnovers in the first, 2 minutes. And then Lenore Sellers and nobody else, no one turned the ball over. So while I do believe that Shane was addressing discipline and addressing, discipline in terms of no penalties, but also discipline in terms of protecting the ball, I think that had been brought up, but it was sort of why did it take it being a literal key to the game for it to actually happen? So I'm kind of in this weird, you said, kind of cross your fingers, hold your breath phase that's okay, you've had an entire week off now. How are you going to reinforce and reintroduce this and not treat it as, okay, this is just a single game issue and realize that the most disciplined players on the field are going to win this game, especially in a night game, against a team that hasn't lost in conference play.
I think it is fantastic for this team that they were able to go get that win against Oklahoma, Lulu, if for no other reason than there has been, at least for me over here in Greenville, a noticeable uptick in the emotion, optimism of South Carolina fans. I mean, I think if anything else had gone wrong for them against Oklahoma, maybe this game doesn't really have the juice. But under the lights, Saturday night, Willie B, Columbia, South Carolina, and the opportunity to hand Texas A&M their first conference L of the season. Is the atmosphere over there setting up the way like it feels over here that Willie B is going to be absolutely shaken on Saturday night?
Yes. So I'll say yes, period. Williams-Brice Stadium will be absolutely electric on Saturday. I don't doubt that. I firmly believe that. I think that from start to finish, the environment in that stadium is going to be mayhem. But to be a Debbie Downer, what I kind of been saying is okay, yes. However, Texas A&M is undefeated in conference play, riding a 7-game win streak both at home and on the road. They've won some tough games in the SEC on the road, whereas South Carolina has yet to win a conference game in Williams-Brice Stadium. So, anything can happen. I'm not saying that it's just, those two factors, but it is sort of what I've been bringing up, hey, this Texas A&M team isn't a team that's proven it gets rattled outside of their own stadium. But to answer your question simply, yes, Williams-Brice Stadium will likely be absolutely insane on Saturday.
I love it. All right, love it. All right, Lulu Kessin, last one. Before we let you get up out of here for the day, you know what's coming. The South Carolina Gamecocks able to beat the Texas A&M Aggies if and only if blank.
the passing game does something. They're able to throw and connect with the receivers. They're aggressive on offense in that kind of same vein. And like we mentioned, they play disciplined football and don't turn the ball over. I think this game is theirs to take.
All right. Last thing, not a question, just a piece of advice, Lulu Kesson. Texas A&M is a cult. Their fans are weird. They will try to convert you. I need you, for the sake of your own sanity and repeated occurrences on this show, stay away from Aggie fans. They're terrifying.
Well, the funny thing, and I'll say this really quickly, is that my boyfriend has been to one SEC football game before he moved here, and it's a Texas A&M game because his cousins went there. And so he's told me all about that environment, and I'm like, it's still nothing like you're about to see on Saturday.
I hope not.
I will not.
I think Kyle Field, College Station, phenomenal home field. I think it's dramatically overrated. I think those World War II cosplaying dorks are trying to convince the world they're cooler than they are. Just be careful around the Ags, because there's something wrong upstairs, Lulu, is all I'm saying.
I'll set screens if they try to get in the press box.
There it is. I love it. Lulu Kesson covers the Gamecocks for the Greenville News. Joins us every Thursday at 8 o'clock. You are the best, young lady. Have a ball this Saturday. Talk to you next week.
Thank you. Thank you. Happy Halloween. I'll see you guys next week.
You as well. Breaking out the Friday Night Lights costume for Halloween is Lulu Kesson.
I'll just thought to shoot and run a screen on those guys. I mean, somebody needs to.
I got
to
tell you,
hey. You have convinced me about the cult thing the more I see.
Dude, that, just go look at any video from a Yale practice. Woo!
But
I was down at the farm watching, and they sent old Brian Kelly down there. And you know what Brian Kelly... What'd Brian Kelly say? He said, they're normal. We ain't normal.
First of all, you're disgracing the robes by doing that while wearing Jedi robes.
Freaking cult, dude. They're so weird. I'm sorry. I think the Aggies are the only college football fan base I'm openly hostile to. Right? Like, the only one I'm openly hostile to. All right, when we come back, yesterday, I had the opportunity to sit down and do a little discussion with ESPN's Marty Smith. Talk to him a little bit about how he got where he is, where he came from, et cetera, and it was a phenomenal conversation that I will play for you next on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.
Our buddy famously Garnet popping into the chat as the Gamecocks set to host the cult of Texas A&M this weekend. He said, cosplaying World War II dorks. I'll be using this, Rob. If those dorks do their midnight yell at the Statehouse again, I will be sure to get a cosplay dork chant going. Feel free, FG, and they deserve it. They deserve it. I went to, and somebody asked me, I don't remember when, not terribly long ago, what my issue is with Texas A&M. And I'm going to tell you. When I lived down in the Florida Panhandle doing radio, the stations that I worked for a cluster of three stations, locally owned, but a cluster of three stations. And our three stations were the flagship stations for Florida State University, Alabama, and LSU in the Florida Panhandle. So one of our stations carried FSU games, one of our stations carried Alabama games, and one of our stations carried LSU games. Because Destin, Florida is affectionately referred to as Baton Rouge East, because after Katrina, a ton of folks from southeastern Louisiana relocated to Destin. There's a very heavy Louisiana influence there in the Destin area. So we were the flagship station of LSU. So LSU, I think it was A&M's first year in the Southeastern Conference. LSU was hosting Texas A&M. And I got press passes, and I went over there to cover the game because I wanted to see what the Aggs fans were all about. I had been to a ton of games in Baton Rouge because, as I have told you guys on the show before, I'm from Louisiana, obviously, so a good chunk of my family are LSU fans, went to LSU. So I was like, you know what? Let me go over. Good excuse to go to an LSU game, and also I want to see what the Aggs are all about. I had a dear friend of mine that I went to high school with who went to Texas A&M. And he's like, dude, it's the best fan base in college football. You're never going to find a better fan base than A&M. Like, you're going to be blown away. Come to Baton Rouge. We'll meet up. I'll take you to Midnight Yell. And I'm like, all right. At the time, I didn't really know much about A&M. And I thought, Midnight Yell, it's a pep rally, right? It's a midnight pep rally. I thought, why the hell not? Why not? And on top of that, the Aggs fans had organized this event, this Midnight Yell, this pep rally. They had organized it to take place in a big lot behind a bar in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, that I was a big fan of when I was growing up. So I went to this event.
He obviously means after he was an adult.
Yes, after I was an adult.
I mean, after your drinking age, you're still not quite an adult yet.
I mean, effectively. When I was a college kid who would occasionally find his way over to Baton Rouge, Louisiana, this bar was a haunt for me. So, I went, and I got there, and there were legitimately 20,000 people there. And I thought, oh, damn, it's pretty good turnout, right? Midnight pep rally the night before a game, pretty good turnout from the crowd. And then those weird-ass yell leaders came out on the stage wearing their overalls and white dress shirts under them. And they started doing the weirdest pep rally I've ever been to in my life. All right. What they do is they don't come out in, like, you know, like a pep rally. Ordinarily, you have the band play and, like, the cheerleaders and the dance team do their dances and stuff. And you'll do chants and stuff. But it's like, you know, traditional cheerleading stuff. U-G-L-Y, you ain't got no alibi. You ugly. Yeah, yeah, you ugly. Right? No, not these dorks. Not these dorks. They grab microphones and they tell jokes. But they don't tell jokes like a stand-up comedian. That's the word I'm looking here for, funny. They basically take the same six jokes and they just replace the name of the school in the jokes. I went on down to see the LSU cheerleaders last night, and all the fans would go, huh? And do you know what I saw when I walked into that room? Huh? One full set of teeth. Giga Maggies. Woo! Yeah! Woo! Hi-ya! Choo-choo-choo-cha! Choo-choo! And I'm sitting in the back of this audience like, what are we doing here, fellas? What are we doing here? What are we doing here? How many LSU fans does it take to change a light bulb? Huh? 79,000. One to do it and the other to get drunk and yell about how good they are at it. Hoo, hoorah, hee-yah, woo-hoo, ha-da. That's it. It's 2 hours of that.
I do have a question. Do those guys, do they get the girls? Do they get the ladies?
I mean, I assume.
Are they looked upon favorably on that campus?
I assume they get the Aggie girls, but I promise you, they're not rolling with that vibe, that look, and that behavior into Baton Rouge and stealing any Tiger ladies away. They're not going into Oxford, Mississippi, and yelling with their dorky overalls on about how, you know, hey, don't Giga Maggies. I promise you, they're not rolling into Oxford, Mississippi, and stealing any of the Rebel ladies. They ain't coming to Columbia, South Carolina, and taking home any of the lady cocks this weekend. I promise you. They're dorks. They're dorks. You know how, and I can say this because I also was a dork, but like not like dork like they're dorks. They're bad dorks. All right, I was a fun dork. You know how, Lonzo, there were like those two or three kids in every high school class that were too weird for even the weird kids? Like, there's the weird kids, but the weird kids are still the cool kids. They're still in the group. They're still cool, right? Like, the weird kids, but the football players will still talk to them. That's fine. They're weird, but they're not, like, outlandish. And then there's that group of dorks that make it uncomfortable. The dorks that do the anime run down the hallway from class to class. And you're like, John Lakios, you have to stop.
All right.
You have to stop, Lakios.
I don't know why you're using my dude's last name. It's kind of messed up. I just want to say I never experienced that because anime wasn't big in the United States yet. So
you know what
I do.
The thing they did was
that's the Naruto run.
Yes, these were the dudes that like when one day one of the cheerleaders was like, you know what, I'm going to be nice to the weird kid today. I'm having a moment. I had a good night at Bible study last night. I'm going to be nice to the weird kid today. And she goes and tries to be nice to the weird kid. And she goes, hey, John, how's your day going, buddy? And he goes and like hisses at her. So that's a real thing I watched happen.
There's a good portion of those kids who sat at my lunch table as a senior because we decided that they needed a place to sit. And so I there's a special place in my heart. Not that I fit in with them. I might have. I doubt it. Scholar athlete. You know, everyone knew who I was. That type of thing.
Five-star recruit.
Yeah. Well,
blue chipper.
Well, I wish. At least a two-star. But anyway, which is a whole lot for our school at the time. I empathized with the weird kids.
I'm not yes, absolutely. But I'm talking about the kids that you empathize with, and then they make you regret it because they go over the top.
These guys, I've seen the guys that you're talking about. No, these are preppy guys. These are guys that were on the baseball team. These are guys that come from money. Daddy's rich.
Yeah,
that's
those,
what these guys
those
are.
Guys are still in with the cheerleaders and all that. All right, even if Zoe doesn't, y'all out there know the dude I'm talking about. Y'all got one you went to high school with. The kid that you one day were like, I'm going to be nice to this kid because, you know, he's ostracized. And then like 10 minutes in, you're like, I regret doing that. I shouldn't have tried this. Being nice has backfired on me because this kid's a weirdo.
The fact that you're saying I'm going to be nice to this kid because... That's kind of messed up.
Okay, Lonzo, the absolute arbiter of moral propriety, has never been there before. But for the rest of us that live out here in the real world,
all right, it's obvious I was that kid. And you know,
no, you're
wow.
not even that guy.
Wow,
you're not even that
well,
guy.
Rob said hi to me today. I bet Rob's my friend. That's going to be awesome. We're going to hang out and stuff, and then it doesn't happen.
Okay, so for those of us who live out here in the real world, you know, that's just how life works. It's unfortunate. Everyone should be nice to everybody else, but that's not how it works. You know the kid I'm talking about, the kid that the cheerleader says hello to and he hisses in her face and runs away like a weirdo? That's A&M. Those kids all turned into Aggies. They all turned into Texas A&M Aggies. They are the people that they show up, and you're nice to them, and then 10 minutes in, you're like, I should not have invited you around my regular friends. You should not. I should not have brought you here. You're in a cult. You're weird. Go away. Naruto run to another table, you dork. I can't. The only fan base I'm openly hostile to, if you see an Aggie fan, you know how Georgia fans, I've always made fun of them for getting down on the ground and barking at other fans?
Wait, they actually get down on the ground?
Yes. Their okay. thing is, they will have one dude drop down to all four Scott Steiner style, and another guy grab him by the back of the shorts and hold him back like he's an actual bulldog trying to attack. That's their thing, and they do that to away team visitors. That's less dumb than everything the Aggies do. I will hang out with Georgia Bulldog men who crawl around on the ground barking before Aggie dorks. Welcome to Columbia, dorks. Back after this on the Rob Brown Show in the Fan Upstate. Corn Chip said there was a girl at my high school that was a loner and would physically hit you if you got in her way when she was running between classes. That's the person I'm talking about, right? The person who makes it, who actively tries to make you dislike them. Not that they're not like
see,
they
here's,
want
here's
to be.
Here's the problem.
Able.
I look at these guys and I see exactly what I said. I see preppies. I see guys that could walk into this room not wearing overalls and you would think they were a normal person. I think this is just an act. This is what they do. It's part of that culture, but I don't think that they're the people that you're describing.
Oh, no. Let me clarify. I'm not saying that the kids that were that way in high school all go to be Aggies, right? Yes. Guys who go to A&M, not on scholarship, come for money. That's not a cheap school to attend. That's an expensive damn school to attend. I know people who have gone to A&M, and I've actively told them, your fan base is made up of dorks. When I say that, I don't mean they were dorky in high school and went on to be Aggies. I mean they're dorks now. And they are the college football equivalent of the people in high school that went out of their way to actively be left alone. And you know, when you're in a high school and you're one of however big your high school was, I think we had like 20,000 kids at my high school, right? Like, it's a big school. It's almost impossible to be a loner at school, right? You are around people all the time. It's almost impossible to be a loner. And then you start getting into classes where you got to work with people, whatever. And there were kids I went to school with who actively disliked being in proximity to other people. Well, at high school, you're in proximity to other people all the time. So in order to be left alone when you're in a place with 20 plus thousand people in it, you've got to actively make people go out of their way to stay out of your way. And so you act weird. You just act weird. There's no other way to put it. I'm not a bully. I'm anti-bullying. But there are some kids that, like, they go out of their way to get you out of their circle, and Aggie fans are the college football version of that. I will tell you the other aspect of it that drives me nuts, and this isn't exclusive to Texas A&M, but they are the best at it. It is the college football fans who make their entire culture nothing more than telling you how much better of a fan than you they are.
Sounds familiar around here.
I'm just saying. All right. Take that as you will. But there are some college fan bases whose entire identity is wrapped up in how big, like how much better they are than you at anything. And A&M is, as far as I'm concerned, easily the most egregious at that. Oh, you know, Kyle Field, College Station. Yo, I've not been to College Station yet. But I'm going to tell you right now. And for those of you that tuned in looking for the Marty Smith interview, unfortunately, I have it. It's saved. It's recorded. But I went to export it to be able to play, and it's going to take like 20 minutes. So we're going to have to get to it tomorrow. All right. So come back tomorrow. We will play that interview tomorrow at probably 8 o'clock straight up. We'll play the interview with Marty Smith. But I will tell you that in that interview where we talked, we spent a few minutes talking about Marty Smith, the person, Marty and McGee, the show, and then his jobs within ESPN and yada, yada, yada. And one of the questions that I asked him, was, if I told you that you have one college football tradition to put on display to illustrate the greatness of college football, what tradition would it be? Would it be Clemson running down the hill and talking, touching Howard Rock? Would it be Sandstorm in Columbia? Would it be, you know, Tennessee running out of the tee? What would it be? And Marty kind of walked through his list of favorite traditions. And when he got to the point that he was talking about fan bases, he said, not me. He said, you know, the folks at College Station are great. That's a great environment. I'm telling you, there is not a louder stadium in America than Death Valley Baton Rouge at nighttime. And I will tell you, as somebody who's been to South Bend, Indiana, Gainesville, Florida, Tallahassee, Florida, Coral Gables, Florida, Tuscaloosa, Alabama, Oxford, Mississippi, Athens, Georgia, yada, 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 I will tell you, as somebody who's been pretty well traveled to college football stadiums across the South and a couple outside of it, he's right. Baton Rouge, LSU on a Saturday night, there is not a louder, more ridiculous stadium to be in. But the Aggie fans will go to the ends of the world to convince you that Kyle Field is special. No, it's not. It's great. It's a great stadium, but it's not special. I would even argue that, and I don't know this because I haven't been to either one of them, but I do talk to people who have. And I will tell you right now, Autzen Stadium in Eugene, Oregon is right there neck and neck with Kyle Field. With 20,000 fewer seats, it is right there with College Station.
All right. I was curious, and you're definitely going to make fun of this, but I'm going to do it anyway. I wanted to see if any former Yale leaders were famous.
I'm sure there's got to be one or two.
And there's a couple. And this makes sense going along with the kind of school that you said it is.
Yep.
It's got to be rich to get in there.
Yep.
Notable former Aggie Yale leaders include former Texas Governor and Secretary of Energy Rick Perry.
Checks out.
Trauma surgeon Dr. Red Duke.
That's a good name.
Yeah, it is a really good name. And Texas State Representative Trent Ashby. So no actors or anything like that, just famous politicians and a doctor.
Not just a doctor, though.
A surgeon.
A doctor that, like, all you do is that doctor stuff,
yeah.
Right? That's not a doctor like a normal doctor.
Well, he's a trauma surgeon,
yeah.
Too, which means, you know, what? Is that like an ER?
Yeah, that's like you come in and you're jacked up. This is the guy that's going to try to fix you or at least not let you die, for sure. That checks out. I will tell you this. Feel how you want to feel about politics. Rick Perry's a weird dude, all right? He's just a weird dude.
Yeah, I said you'd have fun with it tonight. But I don't know. Red Duke comes in. You've just been in a horrible accident. He gets called in, and he was at a Texas A&M game. He's wearing the overalls. Do you say nope?
If he comes into surgery wearing the overalls, if I go in there and they go, hey, Rob Brown, we need this guy, Red Duke, Dr. Duke, to operate on you or else you're going to die. Hey, FYI, he's an Aggie grad. My answer would be, gig him. I mean, I don't hate A&M so much. I'm dying for it.
Okay. All right. So there is a level of hatred there.
But this is what I will say. You know, there's a meme that goes around on the internet. Great one. And usually it has to do with like a fan base, right? So it'll be like lunchtime in the DC universe. And there'll be like five tables. And like over at this table, it's like Batman, Green Arrow, and Polka Dot Man, and then over here it's like King Shark and Chitara and Wonder Woman, and there'll be groups, and it'll go, what table are you sitting at, right? Like, what table, what group of these characters are you sitting with? If I walked into the lunchtime at the college football headquarters, and they're like, what table do you want to sit at? And there's an Aggie at every table, I'm sitting by myself. All right, I'll sit by myself.
I don't want to lose nerd cred by letting you say Chitara. Chitara is from Thundercats.
Thank you for saving me.
It's Cheetah.
I knew that. The point here is the Aggie fans are weird, and South Carolina fans, I don't say this very often, I say it now. Give them hell. All right? Give them hell. Give them hell. I'm not talking about it on the football field. I'm talking like Aggie fans around Columbia. Give them hell.
Come on. No.
Have fun. Go bananas. Talk smack.
Be kind unless someone is being unkind to you, and then do what Rob said.
Give them hell. Start to finish, top to bottom, from the minute that plane touches down in Columbia International till the moment they get on the plane to go the hell back to College Station. Give them hell.
Can you explain to me why overalls are a college thing? Because every college fan base, you look, there are quite a few fellas wearing the overalls.
College football Saturday, I'm fine to put on a unique outfit, a special outfit. All right, I'm good with it. I'm a jersey guy. You know, for me, I'm going jeans and a jersey. If it's hot outside in the summertime, I go with jersey and then the shorts that match the color of the team's pants. You know what I mean? Like, I'm a jersey guy, but I am fine with having like a, you know, like my, like the wife, she has game day outfits. She doesn't wear them in her normal day to day life. But if the Cox are playing on a Saturday night, she's got stuff she breaks out just for game day. Right. I'm fine with that. And overalls are on that list of, for whatever reason they become big, especially the ones that are like the team colored striped overalls.
Right. That's what I'm talking about. And they're all over the place. It looks like every college game day or every college crowd that you see when they show the student section, there are people out there wearing those.
And I'm 100% good with that. Fine. Like it's game day. It's unique. What I'm not down with is these dorks out there that can't decide if they want to be cosplaying sergeants in the World War II Army of the United States of America or if they want to cosplay dirt farmers from Texas. One day they're dressed up in beige khaki outfits like they're about to get shipped off to Iwo Jima, and then the next day they roll out there like they got a cow pasture they got to go flip some patties in. Pick one, you dorks.
Okay, so if you want to compare these to the guys in high school who wore camo and shopped at the surplus store. Maybe that's more of a comparison.
No, I don't think so, because even those guys, I could connect with those guys over something. You know what I mean? I could be like, oh yeah, I hunted growing up. I didn't talk to you about hunting for sure. I drove a truck for a little while in high school. I didn't talk to you about your truck. That's fine. I'm talking about the kids, though, that it's 87 degrees in the middle of August and they show up to school in a trench coat and a fedora. No, John, stop. It is 87 degrees outside. There is no damn need for a floor-length trench coat, my man. None.
All right, again, I don't think you're allowed to wear trench coats in high school.
Well, you're not anymore, but yeah. When I was in high school, you were.
Yeah, so you're being awful specific. You keep throwing names out there like you actually
remember. No, just one.
Just the one guy. Is he a friend?
He, not anymore. And honestly, I'll tell you, I was, funny enough though, I actually was friends with this guy. And I tried to help him. And I came to the conclusion, like my junior year, he doesn't want to be helped. He likes this. This is his choice to live this way. His name was John. Good dude. But just he didn't want to be around people. We only connected because we shared a home room my sophomore year. I remember it very well. And I went into work wearing an NWO or running to school wearing an NWO shirt one day. And he's like, are you a wrestling fan? I was like, yeah, bro. Grew up a wrestling fan. And then we connected over wrestling. That was it. That was our thing. We connected over wrestling.
Yeah, no more. I mean, that's definitely a normal American fan base right there, a wrestling fan.
Oh, for sure. For the record, when I go to wrestling shows, I go like 25% for the wrestling show and 75% to look at wrestling fans. All right? It's a weird fan base, too. I'm part of it. I'm allowed to say it.
Okay, mister, I'm wearing an MJF outfit to AEW.
You know why I did that? Because I'm better than you, and you know it. I became friends with a guy, and it, for me, and again, maybe this is sanctimonious of me, I got to the point where I was like, I'm going to help you be a normal person. I want to help. I'm not saying I'm going to change you, but I'm going to get you to the point where you can have conversations with people in real life and not have them walk away going, never again. He wanted that. That's what he wanted.
Hey, could you help me out with
that's
that?
That's the Aggies.
I probably need some help with that.
I mean, I can.
Especially when you're like talking to like big wig smart people.
Yep.
Like say someone who owns like a soccer team.
Yeah, for sure.
And my mind just goes completely blank and you could have come in for the save, but instead you just stood there and watched.
Or like when we have WWE Hall of Famers on, you know? And Lonzo goes, yes, Mr. Kane.
That still was messed up.
All right, coming up in the next segment, Hayden asks Mario. Mario Heron for the BetQL Network is going to join us on the show. Texter says, I will physically assault someone in Colombia because Rob Brown said so. All right, I didn't go that far.
Wow, the Armada is just a name. It's not a call to action when it comes to physicality.
I'm just saying, give him hell. Texter says, I'm on board. Another texter says, go Penn State. I don't know why they'd send that message.
I don't have a clue why that. I mean, because, of course, we've been talking about Penn State all day.
Why would you randomly say go Penn State to Zohio State, Lonzo and I?
It's so odd. There is someone we both know that's one of those famous people I was talking about who roots for Penn State. So, I mean, you know, maybe it was that guy.
Mario Heron, BetQL Network next. James said it's not the Rob Brown militia.
You sure made it sound like it.
Hey, Nas Mario, next, Sports Flash Now.
In case you didn't know, now you know the Los Angeles Dodgers are your 2024 World Series champions. World Series Series champions. I won't even get through a story if you stay in here. After taking Game 5 from the New York Yankees 7-6 and claiming the series 4-1, don't you dare mess up on any word the rest of the show. New York led by 5 going into the 5th inning, but committed multiple mistakes to allow the Dodgers to tie the game. New York took the lead back in the 6th, but a pair of Dodgers runs in the 8th sealed the win for the Dodgers. Charlotte Hornets improved 2-2 with a 138-133 win over the Toronto Raptors last night. The Buzz scored at least 30 points in all 4 quarters. Make sure you tune in tomorrow at 7 p.m. as the Burns Rebels take on the Boiling Springs Bulldogs right here on the Fan Upstate.
You got to take a listen to this. It's Squawk Pod.
That's right. CNBC's flagship business news show is a podcast, Squawk Pod.
This is CNBC Control 2.
It is not just the show, folks.
It might be even better because it's only audio.
Join me, Katie Kramer, as I take you inside the Squawk Box control room and beyond the headlines of our TV broadcast with Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin every weekday.
Roll alpha.
Listen to CNBC's Squawk Pod free on the Odyssey app.